happened now to complete this and then link it with Jesus. Please check this all for yourself, of course. That inner experience, is it true, leads us to recognize out there the lover. We recognize the sign. You know someone loves you and you find flowers on your somewhere wherever people put flowers, and you recognize the lover in the flowers. That's simple, obviously. We human beings, right back to all of us, everyone I'm talking about now, whether we put the words on it is another matter. People recognize in the spring of water coming out of the foot of the mountain, they recognize God, the one they call. They recognize the lover, the life. And so they worship, yes, that's the word for it, the spring, and so they should. Because the spring of living water somehow does truly speak of the mystery. The God is at the heart of that spring. Or if they live, people, under the shadow of an enormous volcanic mountain, and we go back, we call it pagan, I don't know, we've got all kinds of funny names, but let's be honest about it. It can be distorted too, but it's a beautiful vision of God. God is the mountain. And they're right. God is at the heart of the smoke pouring out and the fire and the power of it. Because there, that most powerful, most moving, most vibrant thing in their life experience, all their feelings of God are transferred there and they see it there. Or it might be the stars, it might be the fire that goes through the forest, it might be Mother Earth, it might be the sea, it might be whatever, it might be the mountain of Sinai. And somehow that place is meaningfully the place where they are touched by the mystery most powerfully. In other words, they recognize the one who is calling them in. Here there's a response between the inner word and the word spoken there, or the thunder or the lightning, or the events of their life, the battle. And we search our life experience and the events of our life, or the exodus from Egypt, that powerful action. Somehow, the one who is moving me and the one who drew us out of Egypt, there's a recognition going on, and I listen to the outer word with my own inner. And now I go to my last point here, the prophets. We also recognize God in the words of the prophets. Because we're interconnected, all of us. Your life experience teaches me. Your love experience teaches me about love. Your religious experience reveals something to me and mine to you and ours to each other. We're influencing each other all the time. And now the prophet is the one whose words and whose actions are recognized by us as revealing the God we already know but whom we see there. Now, we must look at that a little bit more closely because it's going to be pretty critical to the rest of our journey. I'm not a prophet because I claim to be one. If I were to say I'm a prophet, that's not enough. Some discernment has to go on, doesn't it? You can't claim it. Or you may, but you may be wrong. There are false prophets and true prophets. It's not enough that people claim someone as a prophet. That isn't enough. But whatever of the false prophets and the deceptions that go on and the misdirections and the wrong notions that we hook on to God, I think an honest look at our history tells us that there is true prophecy. And I think it must have ultimately, whatever the criteria, it's got something to do with by their fruits you'll know them. And if the consensus of people who are living from prayer, living from the inner word, if the consensus of those people recognize in Isaiah, in Hosea, in Jeremiah, in Elijah, in Moses, in Jesus, if something about him rings true to them and draws them on to a life that is more free, more loving, more fruitful, then by that process we can come, the body of people can come to discern that that man's life and that man's words, provided we understand them, of course, and are humble before them and see them in all their human poverty as well, they are a revelation to me and to us of God. A word spoken out there that brings truth, brings meaning, and I can trust it because of the quality of his life and because of what happens to me and to us when we live following it. That's a very torturous path I've taken you on there, I agree. But somewhere in there, I think, is the importance of Jesus. Augustine, when he came to know Jesus in his middle 30s, had this to say, and the stories are all over. Late have I loved you, O beauty so ancient and so new. Late have I loved you, for you were within me, and I was outside, says Augustine. And I sought you outside, and in my ugliness I fell upon the lovely things which you have made. He was distracted, you see. You were with me, and I was not with you. I was kept from you by those things, yet had they not been in you, they wouldn't have been at all. And then what happened to Augustine? His life experience, his meeting of a beautiful St. Ambrose in Rome, his own saintly mother, and her prayers for him, and the little cry of two little kids as he was walking along in Carthage, I think it was, or Hippo, somewhere in the north of Africa, walking along, or it may have been Milan, I've just forgotten where exactly, but he was going by this garden, he heard two little kids playing a little game that we might have all played when we were kids. It was called in Latin, Tolle Lege. Pick it up and read. And the boy would leave a little message, and the girl would pick it up and read, and whacko. And then she'd leave a little message and he'd pick it up and read. Just a little kid's game playing. But the words got through to Augustine. Pick it up and read it. Now the meaning of the words is obvious, but not what came to Augustine, and this was what he'd been fighting against. He didn't want to read this word out there that fascinated him, but seemed to be too demanding of him. And he went home and he tells us the story, and he just opened it as I opened it there and got a different passage to the one I got. And his was took him deeply into that inner word, and the recognition was there. And the words of little children somehow bound him into a journey then. And he says, and look at the lovely words, the five senses, the body language of Augustine, the honest coming to terms with his humanity. He says, you called and you cried to me, and you broke open my deafness. You sent forth your beams and you shone upon me, and you chased away my blindness. You breathed fragrance upon me, and I drew in my breath, and now I pant for you. You, God, the mystery. I tasted you, and now I hunger and thirst for you. You touched me, and I have burned for your peace. That experience of Augustine and the mystical and ordinary experiences of countless people all through perhaps is most beautifully expressed here by John. This is where I think Jesus' ultimate importance lies. Not only did he give meaning to people, yes, he did. Not only did he love people, yes, he did. But the meaning he gave them and the love he had for them took them into their deepest religious experiences. When Jesus loved them, there was something of God there. They had to put words on it. When Jesus gave meaning, it drew them into prayer. It gave them their ultimate, deepest direction for their psyche. And so they couldn't think of journeying without what he'd said, what he revealed, what he showed. His face somehow was the face of God for them. His words were the words of God for them. He was the outer word that held all that they were kind of dreaming and yearning for. And John here in his first letter, chapter 1, first four verses, just an old man, I suppose, writing to people saying, something that's existed since the beginning, that we've heard and that we've seen with our own eyes, something we've watched and touched with our hands, the Word who is life, that's our subject. That life was made visible. We saw it, says John, and we're giving our testimony, telling you of the eternal, unending life, life beyond this, which was with the Father and has been seen by us. What we've seen and heard, God, he couldn't stress it more, could he? What we've seen and heard, we're telling you so that you may be in union with us, as we are in union with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. We're writing this to you to make our own joy complete. It is important to know Jesus because the meaning and the love he gave went right down to the very depths of what we can only call religious experience and the God who is the mystery at the heart of that. Peter, similarly, in his first letter, chapter 1, verses 8 to 9, says to the community that he's writing to, the friends he'd made and the people he'd grown to love because he'd shared this Jesus person with them, he said, you didn't see him, yet you love him. You are in love with him. And still without seeing him, you are filled with a joy, religious experience, so glorious that it cannot be described because you believe. Because you believe, because you've put your love there, because you've trusted it, because you've listened to it, and you have faith in that inner experience, and you've said yes to it, and you're working from it. You are sure of the end to which your faith looks forward, the salvation of your souls. Is the English translation. The Greek word is psyche, the meaning, your whole meaning of life. The goal and the meaning of your very life is bound in with this Jesus. This statement that I've just given you from John and from Peter about the profound meaning of Jesus in relation to human existence, to the meaning of our whole journey, the salvation of our psyche, of our life, really. Again, statements as deep as that right through the history of the Christian world. So we're on to some basic thread of meaning and truth here. I've just taken one here, for example, from the middle or the first third, in fact, of the second century. A second generation, a person called Irenaeus. And just a few facts about him first. He was born in a place called Smyrna. Yes, about the middle of the second century. And Smyrna is in what's present Turkey, near the west coast of Turkey, a little bit north of Ephesus, if you know your geography there. And as a little boy, he tells us in his many writings how he used to listen to the old bishop of the place, a man called Polycarp. And this Polycarp, who was martyred eventually in times of persecution, he was a disciple himself of John. So he's only two steps away from Jesus himself. And this little Irenaeus fellow ended up getting ordained a priest, and he went over to Lyons on the Rhone River, just up from Marseilles, which was an important harbour even in those days. And this was a trading station coming across Europe and then I suppose through the Alps somehow and then down the Rhone River, and he became the local priest and then the bishop of this particular area in what is now France. And people already were starting to, and it happened right from the beginning, to misunderstand Jesus, to paint the wrong pictures of Jesus, to distort his image, to reduce him in some way. And this man wrote his book, an enormous tome, called, familiarly in Latin anyhow, Against the Heresies. Now a heresy, which is a word I'm sure you're familiar with, it comes from the Greek halesis, which means a selection or a sect. It means something that's been cut off the whole. And so it's wrong because it's taken out of proportion. It's wrong often because of what it says, but more often because of what it denies. And if you take any little bit out of its proper place, it's no longer seen properly. And so he, I won't go on much longer, but he wrote this tome against the people who were misconceiving Jesus because he meant so much to him. And he's just got one line, many beautiful lines, but one of them I've recorded there for you, where he says, the glory of God, now I'm using that same word, God, for the one that Irenaeus felt and we feel at the heart of our religious experience, the glory of God, what is it? Now you can think of all the things people would have said. The glory of God would be something to do with worship. The glory of God would have been something to do with battles or victories or good harvests. Or the glory of God would have been something to do with temples. Or I can think of a million things people have said about that. And look what he said. It's a person who's fully alive. Where did he get that insight from? How did he know that what God was all about, the glory of God is a human being who's fully alive. Like the glory of parents is a child that's maturing and growing in wisdom and freedom and lovability and ability to respond. And that's the glory of parents. The glory of a teacher is a student who's demanding to know and somehow gaining in knowledge all the time. The glory of God is a human being who's fully alive. Jesus had taught him that, showed him that. And however he said, which Jesus had also taught John, who taught Polycarp, who taught Irenaeus, full human living is to see God. You can't distort God. God, as far as we are concerned, is in a relationship with us, drawing us into life, into love. And if God gets out of that context, it becomes something false. Our journey, he says, our full human living journey has got something to do with this deepest, profound religious experience, to see God in nature, in people, in life, in each other, in the poor, in our children, in the world that we're privileged to be part of. We'll now come to our own world then. Yes, we need meaning, and maybe Jesus has something to say there. We need love, and Jesus has something to say to that. My world, my society, me as part of this world and you, maybe here our needs are our greatest too. Because our world is increasingly, I think, agnostic. Our world increasingly is saying, we don't know anything about this God. And I'm not sure I'm right here, but I think I am if I say that the problem with agnosticism is, if there may not be a God, if that's not something to think about, if that's irrelevant to my thoughts and my decisions and my journey, what am I saying? Aren't I saying that maybe, ultimately, there is no meaning? Maybe, ultimately, I am not loved. Maybe, ultimately, the yearnings in the heart of that little child and that old man and that ordinary young kid wandering around, the religious experiences that we're having are actually an illusion. Maybe there's no truth there. Maybe those moments we had and have that drew us, it's like saying there's a scent there but there may be no prey. There's nothing at the end of the journey, maybe. And if that's a maybe, if the scent in our nostrils is a deception, if the longing of our hearts has no real object, then, yeah, I guess what is left except to fill in time, to do this and do that, and then go to bed and then get up in the morning and switch on the television for as long as we can, or heaven knows what, and I'm not saying we don't need all, but I suppose we just cope from day to day in an empty, hurried, busy, distracted, tortured, unsure, empty way. May we need today, because a lot of agnosticism surely comes from the fact that too many so-called gods are false. And if Paul the Pharisee in the first century, say, or me, Peter the fisherman, or me, John, if all I'm presented with out there, if the outer words that speak to me or claim to speak to me of God don't resonate with my heart, don't engage my prayer, don't actually capture the quests that are coming right from the deep roots of my being, if they're not speaking to me and they're the only things I hear, I might still be able to stay in touch with my inner journey, I might, but I don't think I would. It's too heavy and too noisy and too distracting, and I don't know what I'd do, but I'd probably be agnostic or atheistic, or somehow I'd probably have to live without all that noise. They needed somebody to come into their world, Jesus, and put a face on God and put words for God that rang true. And that's what he did. And that's why all that energy was captured. And not just the energy of the Jews that knew Jesus, but the energy, as I've already said, of that whole blooming Roman Empire world. Ordinary people, because God is calling all of us to himself. Ordinary people need the word, the revelation, to take the veil off and encourage and reflect and draw the faith responses that enable us to get our whole life, as it were, together in a really religious encounter. Our world surely